Hello, lovely humans. I'm Wyo Lee, and you are listening to Sex Stories X Stories, a podcast where we share the most personal parts of our most personal identities and relationships in an effort to make the world a sexier, more loving place where taking care of each other is the norm. And our guest today is a non-monogamously partnered 39-year-old bisexual, pansexual, polyrelational female who grew up in Colorado going to a Unitarian Universalist church. She is into dirty talk, sexting and sex literature, pegging, switching and meditative flogging, Hitachi sharing and sex on psychedelics, a writer, producer, and intimacy coach. You may recognize her voice because she is one of the incredible hosts of Girls on Porn. Welcome, Laura Ramaday.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
It is so wonderful to be here with you in person. Mm. We're doing some creative shoots after this. It's very exciting. I would like you to start off by telling us, if you had to rate yourself today on a sexual shame-o-meter with 10 being the most full of shame and 1 being like not so shamey at all, where do you fall today right now?
3.
Okay. When does it fluctuate, or like what has your shame-o-meter coaster been like throughout your lifetime?
Oh boy. I think that generally I'm pretty low shame, and that's kind of what I've been able to provide other people is destigmatizing things and helping them dismantle some of the shame that they inherited through either their parents or their cultures or just expectations were put on them. And it can fluctuate because I have some of those cultures or expectations that are put on me, like through family, but pretty good at navigating them, like pretty good at feeling proud as opposed to ashamed.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
So, okay, this is a new question that I'm testing out, so you can help me workshop it if you will, okay. Or you can be like, that's horrible, scrap it. On the note of like kind of familial or cultural expectations, how do you think shame has affected your relationships and your sense of pleasure in your life so far?
Well, there are positives there, right?
Right.
I actually had a guest on my podcast who was from Poland and very like repressive religious culture, and was like, but we can thank the Catholic Church for taboo because taboo can be really hot to leverage.
I am trying to understand taboo still. So.
Yeah, she specifically makes nunsploitation films. So she's like really harnessing a kink that comes out of that oppression, right? So
yeah.
Like there are ways that I miss a tad of the shame that I had. Like when I first started watching porn, it was so delicious because I felt bad, or I was like, why should it be? Or like if someone finds out that I'm like, if my roommate hears me, am I slutty? Am I gross? You know, and I've grown into just being like very much owning that kind of thing and learning that that's actually like a fascinating, wonderful thing to share with people.
Yeah.
But there are times when I'm like, but everything's kind of bland now because it's all accessible.
Interesting. Oh, that's so interesting. Okay. So in this society that we live in where like euphemism and sometimes even like white lies that are supposedly polite, like what of those types of cultural norms do you think are helpful? And then like, what are the parts where you're like, let's get rid of that?
White lies. So say more what you mean by that. Like
so
sort of keeping things secret as like withholding kind of thing, or?
No. So as a person who's a little bit on the spectrum and very straightforward and direct and literal in my thinking.
Yeah.
Over the past 5 years of interviewing people about their sex lives, I'm like, oh, there's a category that I personally label regular human lies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those parts where it's like, you know, more appropriate to say, oh, they went to bed together than like, oh, they're fucking.
Or, yeah.
But, you know, it creates this place for secrecy, which in some ways is very sexy, but also in some ways is harmful. And so I'm like, I'm curious if people are having experience with, you know, normalized, basically like white lies in the name of propriety or niceness or politeness that is like, actually that fucked up my own sex life. Because like for me, if someone had just been straight up when I was younger was like, well, yes, like as a woman, you can initiate sex, but there's going to be all this other stuff to it. Instead of being like, if a girl wants sex and she likes boys, she should be able to have it. You know, so that's what I'm just like unpacking now. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. What a layered question, because I think language is really fascinating, right? So it feels like there isn't quite a short answer because sometimes it's the language we use to describe something is actually kind of fun. And I definitely believe in like privacy and choice. But yeah, like when it's like there's a thick layer of innuendo and we're not just comfortable saying what the thing is, then I think that's where it gets problematic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like where we feel uncomfortable just like saying what we need to. And I think it's a difference between can I share this with a friend? Like, can I just be blunt? Like, I know that one of the things that strikes people about me is that I can be incredibly frank about, like, so here's the thing is, like, we're going on a date tonight, but I'm not gonna be able to fuck because I'm on my period and I don't like to fuck on my period first time. And people are like, wow, and like, find that really refreshing. Or just being able to talk about sex because I host a podcast. Like, similarly, people will come to me with their problems because they don't feel like comfortable talking about that with anyone else.
Yeah.
So that's where the destigmatization, like, that's where I think the stigma is, sucks, because you feel uncomfortable navigating something, or like,
yeah,
literally uneducated because everything is hidden in innuendo. This is totally unrelated, but it just made me think of like what's happening on social media right now, where we were sort of just talking about this before the podcast, but where like you can't say sex on TikTok, like you have to say segs,
and like, and I'm like, but it means the same. That's exactly corn, what I mean. That's and exactly I'm
like,
what I mean.
Who is this helping? Because potentially, like, kids are still going to stumble a pot, like they're going to find it, but just be confused, you know? Like, my mom read from a textbook in the 50s and said penis because she didn't know what a penis was or how to pronounce it, and it was embarrassing for her. There's like a similar thing where I'm like, there have to be Zoomers right now who are like, just think segs is how you spell it.
Exactly. That's literally the heart of kind of what I've been thinking about a lot lately, because I haven't been sure about how to kind of participate in the current culture because I try so hard to follow the rules and they don't matter. They're arbitrary.
Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking of it largely in terms of the education that we do get. So I would love to hear about your sex education. In your intro info, it had to do with church, or at least part of it.
Yes. So in like around middle school, I started going to a Unitarian Universalist church in Colorado that my mom took me to. We weren't a super religious family. It was more about her, I think, wanting to find community. And this was around the time when she was separating from my dad. So it was like a nice way to sort of build a neighborly sensation, and with like a great organization. This was an incredibly progressive church. Just to give some context, I think when I was in like eighth grade, they voted on whether to incorporate into their bylaws a statement about being inclusive of LGBTQIA people. At the time, we didn't have IA, but we did have members of the church who were trans, like very openly and publicly. And so we voted on that, and it was unanimously accepted except for one contrary vote.
Okay.
So this was a congregation in 98 that said, like, we would love to announce out loud that we are welcoming of the gay and trans community, etc. So they offered a sex ed class when I was in sixth grade that was optional and was literally in the church basement, and it was co-ed. So it was boys and girls. And it was everything from being assigned to buy a condom, like, go out, find, like, get a condom somehow. Like, as a sixth grader, you can do it with your parents. You can try to find one otherwise. But you need to get comfortable seeking out and finding contraceptives, to, like, us having to build diagrams of anatomy of, like, the other gender and just talking about incredibly candid things. They had a bisexual woman come in and talk about her sexuality and masturbation. And we were in sixth grade, so I had a really great introduction to just very frank sex talk and like, this is what it is. And like, you should ask these questions. You should masturbate to know what you like just a discussion that wasn't stigmatized again. So that did kind of set me on a path.
Yeah.
And I even kind of became like the friend early on who was like, oh, that's not true, when people would kind of pass forward information that wasn't right about STIs or whatever the case may be.
That's awesome. Do you feel like that is the reason that you are so frank now with dates? You're like, I'm not going to fuck with you. Like, I'm not going to fuck you tonight. Blah, blah, blah.
I think I've just been talking about sex my whole life.
That's
and
amazing.
So it's like not uncomfortable, you know, like the culture and the family stuff I mentioned before is from like a specific section of my family and from like actually more recent in my adult life. Whereas like my mom was pretty influential in raising me to be comfortable talking about sex. And while she was like pretty clinical about it, and she even like waited for marriage, she was still very open-minded and progressive and able to like talk to me about things and encouraged me to approach things that way. She also like showed me a video that was like educational about like gay folks when I was like in fourth grade, and explained what the word faggot meant and why we shouldn't use it. And like, so all of that came really early. And if anything, I became kind of like a crusader, you know, awesome. I was like very invested in not hurting people and in having like the correct information, and saw that it was like this obsession with sex is like misguided, or like just kind of was able to see through that much earlier than most folks are.
That's fucking rad.
Yeah.
Okay, I would love to hear now, what are your health and safety conversations with new partners like? Or repeat partners? Like, how do you walk people through that? Do you usually wait for them to initiate? Do you initiate? Like, what are your kind of needs in that realm?
I usually initiate, like, I feel like it's become kind of standard fare. Like, if I'm engaging with new partners, it's often through something like Field, or if I meet them in real life, and it'll be like a quick touch base. Like, hey, like testing every 3 months minimum is kind of my policy. I use condoms with anyone who isn't my primary partner, and like just kind of rattling that stuff off. And it's not a big deal. Oh, you really? Know, it's easy. Like, I think the more fun conversations are the, like, what are you into conversation. That part is like, let's just do a logistical stop and then into like, how do we want to play? Or like, what do you like that kind of thing.
Are you usually the one initiating those, or do you get super turned on if a partner does? Cause I feel like I usually start it and I'm like, I would like it if someone else like laid the foundation.
It's a great question. I think I'm often initiating a lot of when I'm playing on my own, especially. I'm often like unicorning. Like, I enjoy doing that. I like to play with couples. So a lot of times I'm like asking preliminary questions about their relationship and what it is that they're looking for, what their expectations are, what their experience level is. And then it's like the, what are you into conversation? And then it's like, by the way, testing this kind of thing.
Okay.
So yeah.
So you front load it with the fun stuff.
Yeah. Good. Or I'll just like kind of like, I like to test to see what's worth it. You know, like that's kind of what I'm like, the conversation I'm having if it's on an app is like, have you done this kind of thing before? Yeah. You know, like what is your relationship? What are your boundaries in a relationship, or what's the arrangement kind of thing? And then that can open to like, so it starts with like, is this sort of a safe place for me to proceed?
Yeah.
And then it's like, how could we potentially fit in or like play together? And then it's like, okay, so just to make sure we're all comfortable, it's like safety. And then also deeper into boundaries and like, have you ever had an experience that sucked, or like anything that like made you feel jealous or uncomfortable? Like, I get into that stuff too.
That's great. What are your kind of like, especially for unicorning, if you're with a couple, what are your, not safety as in health and safety, but what are your like needs from them energetically, maybe in terms of what you'll engage with?
So I want to make sure that I'm not there to solve any relationship problems.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that both partners want me there, that it's not like a, oh, this person wants this more and this other one is kind of going along with it. And it's ideal if they have experience, although like if I get a good vibe from someone and like feel like they're having all the conversations and they're doing it right and like the reason they're interested in this. Because a lot of couples were like, the woman might be queer and like wants this relationship but wants to play also, as opposed to like, I'm getting a unicorn for my boyfriend's birthday kind of thing.
Yes.
And then I like to talk to them about how they play or what they like, because I really like to cultivate a vibe and kind of like meet people where they're at. So it's not necessarily that I'm coming in and saying, here's exactly what I want to have happen, but I like to feel out like, is it exciting for you to spoil me, or is it fun if we take turns spoiling each of you? You know, I really like to sort of create a connective environment with people where like they feel really free to play, but I can also kind of just throw out ideas as it's happening. And I think those like frank conversations where I'm like, would you like this or would you like that, like really help with that. And then you get into it and people know it's fair game, so you can kind of just like move with your inspiration in the moment.
Yeah, that is exactly what I aspire to in my connections, like the creative co-collaboration part of it, like, which is really, and like you said, if I find the right person or the right couple and they are awesome at communicating, even if they don't have the experience, they can be like wonderful play exploration buddies, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to ask a really nerdy specific question about health and safety stuff, just because it's come up for me in my personal life a couple times, you know? So I've been like, yes, I use barriers or protections for anyone I don't know that well, or anyone who I'm not basically fluid bonded with. And I'll say, I use the term fluid bonded with people. Yeah. And then there still are often moments, because of the cultural norms, where they'll like lick their hand and go to touch me instead of using lube, or where they assume that even though I said we're not fluid bonded, I take that seriously, that takes a conversation, they want me to go down on them, or they want to go down on me without protection.
Yeah.
Is that something that you specifically call out ahead of time, or have you had any kind of like instances of that? Like, how do you handle that level of nuance? Because also, I have herpes in my throat because condoms I didn't use condoms for a blowjob in the past. And I love deep throating. I'm a slut. And we had the health and safety talk, but he didn't tell me that he had had unprotected sex, even though we had agreed that, you know. Yeah. So does that come up for you at all with
that's
the flu?
A great question, because it is a specificity. Like, that is a detail that often gets overlooked. Yeah. Like, I feel comfortable going down on people without protection. Like, that's where my line is.
If you have the testing conversation.
Yes, if we've had the testing conversation, or they've disclosed, like, some, you know, like, I'm comfortable with that within, like, reason, essentially, or, like, with those other protections in place. So, and it's a funny question about, like, it's a really detailed and good question about, like, licking your hand or, like, that kind of thing. Like, I definitely wouldn't, like
touching their junk and then immediately going to touch you.
Yeah. Like, because I'm okay putting my mouth or having someone put their mouth on me without that barrier, then things like that don't bother me. Like, if someone's, like, licking their hand and putting it there, like, that's okay because their mouth is going to be there anyway.
Right.
But I totally hear you that is tricky if you, like, want to be using barriers and, like, dental dams, like, incorporating more protection that, like, yeah, it's easy to be like, whoops, you missed a detail. And, like, what was the point of this barrier if we, like, broke it this way?
Well, especially at sex parties. Because for me, like, if I've had a conversation, we've exchanged testing, I know the risk factors, great. When I go to a sex party, that's kind of why I've stopped going lately, because in my opinion, it's pretty loosey-goosey. Like, unless we're going to have, like, a contained orgy where I know everyone's health and safety, like, I want to kind of have more information. So I've just been thinking about this more lately and how to kind of, like,
how to navigate that
without being like rules everywhere, you know, because I want to have fun too, you know?
Yeah, parties are hard that way because they often become really fluid really quickly. Yeah. And the expectation is, like, condoms on dicks, but that's kind of it.
Yeah.
That can get dicey in, like, an emotional way as well as, like, a health and safety way. So yeah, it's a good point. I feel like that might limit you to, like, specific kinds of parties or going to those parties and saying, I'm playing with you and you, but, like, not anyone else, which I think that's an easy way to handle it. Because if you know that beforehand, like, I'm just going to limit my partners, or I'm, like, going to go with plans ahead of time for, like, who I want to play with and let them know, like, I want to use these barriers. So that means that I don't want to play with anyone else. And if we're playing, you can't turn around and, like, eat this person's pussy and then, like, come back and eat my, you know, like, that
kind
of thing.
Yeah, we're like, let's brush our teeth, let's do some risk factors in between. Yes. Or use laurels. I always have laurels on hand.
Yeah.
Okay, so in your perfect world, what would sex ed be like? It sounds like you got a pretty strong foundation.
I did, and I think the best form of sex ed would start earlier. Yeah. Like, I love what they're doing in certain, like, I don't know if it's the Netherlands or certain like Scandinavian countries where, like, they're starting sex ed in an age-appropriate way really early to, like, educate kids about their own privacy and their bodily autonomy and their safety and their anatomy before then progressing them into, like, this is, like, going to provide this source for pleasure. There are ways that this is going to be, like, culturally important and socially important, and, like, educating kids on that. Because we do all just, like, run around and grab each other's genitals, like, until we, like, are educated about consent. And like, I came up in a time when child bodily autonomy, like, wasn't a discussion. I think now that's massively shifting, where
totally
it's a different thing, where, like, if someone wants to hug you, like, you give permission for that, as opposed to your uncle just coming up and grabbing you, or, like, whatever. So I think that is really valid, and I know it scares the shit out of a lot of Republicans in the country, because, like, you're teaching them about sex. I'm like, no, we're teaching them about safety.
Safety, yeah.
Like, teaching them about safety early and then sex, so that women can have pleasure. Like, people who have vulvas can have pleasure, because that's just not taught. And that, like, we can learn about, like, a full spectrum of sexuality as opposed to a very biologically functional view or an abstinence view of what sex is. So
yeah, and I think also for heteronormatively paired couples, like, the more pleasure the woman half of the partner is having, the more the penis owner is going to have, because it's way more fun. And probably one of the main complaints I hear, I don't know if you, like, hear this from your audience, is just, like, dudes being like, she doesn't want to fuck me, I don't know why, you know. And it's like, well, it's all of it together.
Yeah.
Any other things about education or for adults? Or how do you think the world would change if we did what they do, but for adults, like, had a sex camp here? That's, like, my current, like, fantasy dream. I'm like, how do I make a sex camp?
So, like, host a sex camp? I love that. I mean, that's a lot of what I care about, too, is educating folks. Because, I mean, I truly think that so much of the, like, I might be taking it too far, but, like, so much of the violence and the, like, hatred in comments, there's just so much that's fed by sexual repression. Yes. Because there are entire populations of, like, white supremacists and incels and like however you want to label them, who like largely what they're dealing with is massive aggression, and like a lot of that comes from sexual frustration.
Yes.
I think if like these men had somewhere to better like work through what they're dealing with and like feel pleasure and feel freedom in their pleasure, they wouldn't be online like talking to each other, starting like violent uprisings. Like, yeah. I know that I'm like very much like reducing and simplifying something, but I do think it's that important and that powerful, because repression creates a resistance. And sometimes that resistance turns violent, especially when you're talking about like masculine, testosterone fueled, like patriarchal, I'm not like toxic masculinity stuff, where like that just gets carried out and out. And it's like, somebody suck his dick. Like, just
totally. That's how I
jump off like, into I'm a like, trash can and like chill out. Like the abstinence, the like No Nut November, like all of those movements are directly tied to that, those kinds of like violent uprisings. Like, there's so much connectivity between like those communities online that it's literally like these guys just need sexual help.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's another, what I would call a regular human lie, is the idea that masculinity is this certain macho way, and that like feelings are weak. It's like, well, no, actually feelings help you get laid more satisfyingly. Like, and and that brings our whole life up everywhere.
And also like increase your physical health, like your physical and mental baseline. Health, it's, you know?
How can you have a good physical experience if your physical container is not in good form?
Yeah.
Also, my other biggest pipe dream is, everything you said, imagine if it could be addressed by, and this is a very radical notion, sex work, full service sex work being legalized and covered by insurance once
incredible.
A month, right?
It would be
like
incredible.
Therapy, I mean, ideally once a week, but like even if it was once a month, if people knew that they were going to get laid, even once a quarter, I'm like, our world, think about the amount of like productivity, creativity, like what people would create if they were, I mean, just speaking for myself, I don't know if you're like this, like I get all balled up and crazy and like hyper-focused on when am I going to get fucked again if I don't know when I'm going to get fucked again. And until I have that like, you know, answered, I am distracted.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I get laid, I'm like, ah,
I can like
possible.
Do other stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I just think that's like, it's genuinely like a human health issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So take us through your personal sexy timeline with your formative experiences, starting with, we heard a little bit about church. We heard a little bit about that. Was that the first time you had heard about sex? No, because you had the gay video. So when do you first remember becoming aware of sex? And then take us through your formative experiences. I also have your notes if you want to like.
Oh, sure. I mean, I first became aware of sex as a child. Like, I think I just asked what doing it meant, because I like heard that in kindergarten or something, like literally like an expression that I didn't understand. And then it was like explained to me that like sex is something that like a physical act essentially, but it was very abstracted. And like, you know, I have like vague memories of picturing what I thought it was. And it was literally like two people laying horizontal, perfectly still, you know, like it was like a very strange, like put your Barbies together and put them under the bed. And we don't really know what happens there, but we're somehow intrigued that we don't know why.
So your Barbies were just flat laying on each other. Mine did scissor.
I wasn't advanced enough. I was just like mashing them together and then just like laying them on top of each other, like under my bunk bed or something. Be like, well, you'll go in there now. I also have a memory, and I'm not sure what age this is, but I think it's after that era, of watching something where somebody was like kissing. It was like the beginning of a sex scene, and I probably wasn't allowed to watch much beyond kissing. Mm-hmm. But it like basically made me wet, and I was like young, and just asked my mom that I was like, I feel like something weird happened. Like, I feel like something wet happened basically. And she was like, yeah, that can happen sometimes when you're like, it just kind of explained that I was like essentially sexually stimulated, but in kind of more careful terms, you know?
Yeah. I love your mom. I know that this is not your mom's sex stories, but like, she seems cool as fuck. Did she have like progressive parents, or like how is she like that?
She,
to whatever degree you think she's comfortable with you answering.
Yeah, I don't think she would mind. I think she also had a great mom. I don't think she had a particularly progressive upbringing, but also not a particularly conservative upbringing. Like, her dad was a veteran and her mom was very like kind and generous. She grew up like not with a lot of money, but in a big family where they like did their best and loved each other. Although she like waited for marriage, I think enough of the like hippie movement kind of rubbed off on her. And she also was very dedicated to being a good parent. And like, she actually was like a parenting counselor and taught parenting classes. So she was like reading all of the books and like really dedicated to educating me in a conscientious way, as opposed to just being fearful about certain things. So she's always been pretty progressive, but yeah, it's hard to say. I've never asked her that. I should.
That's cool. I would just be curious too, yeah, right? Because like my mom has started sharing more bits and pieces as I have spent the last 5 years of my life devoting it to sex. And so it's, you know, interesting learning more about their upbringings, what was or wasn't normal.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else took place in your life that led you to the sexy place you are today?
Okay, what else? So I've always been pretty independent. So I think I somehow, like, I was never a very, like, boyfriendy girl, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, certainly had crushes and was, like on that train, but also wasn't, like, didn't feel deficient if I didn't have a boyfriend when everyone else had a boyfriend, or like, oh, I have to make this happen. Like, didn't rush into any of that, but at the same time had this like pretty advanced sexual education. So like I lost my virginity at 18 in Hawaii to a relative stranger, and it wasn't like prom and we'd been dating for a year, you know. Like I had basically a 2-night stand to like lose my virginity. And listen, we can talk about virginity as a construct, but virginity as we define it, you know.
Partnered sexual debut.
Yeah, partnered sexual debut in a big way. Although I had done like blowjobs and that kind of thing like before then. So like high school was kind of about, you know, trying to make things happen, experiencing things and being like, okay, did that, like check that off, you know, like almost wanting to like check off each base around like first base, second base system. And then I definitely spent a few years having performative sex because I wanted to do it well.
Okay.
Meaning
post-virginity or like hookup before, or like all of it?
Post-virginity is kind of what I'm talking about. Although I left out a key detail where like I went to a small art school, like a magnet school, and had like older friends. So I was like a freshman, friends with seniors and juniors. And I heard someone talking about using their shower head, and that was actually how I discovered my orgasm.
Okay.
So like we were kind of talking about masturbating, like just like kind of getting into that. And this is like all kinds of progressive people, you know, and somebody mentioned a shower head and I had one. So like that was how I discovered my first orgasm, which like turned into me just like obsessively, like 2 a.m. would wake up and be like, will my mom hear me if I just sneak into the bathroom and use a washcloth to quietly mute the water? Like,
that's so
just
funny.
Like sneaking around, just like a horny kid trying to use a shower head. But then,
wait, pause for details there, please, because I just, at a trade show, tested out Womanizer's new designed, they're not sponsoring this podcast, I wish they would, they were not interested, they didn't seem interested yet, but it's their first on-purpose-for-pleasure designed shower head. So they, like, nice. Combine with some German engineers, so it has good regular shower, and then there's, like, a whirly thing, and then another one that's more like, do you remember what your shower head was like? Yeah, yeah.
So that particular shower definitely had different settings, definitely, like, high pressure. And I think it was like when the center ones are going, but the like ones on the outside are kind of chilled out or like not activated at all.
Yeah.
And it was like like that kind of thing.
Okay.
Like but a I could little use bit just like a steady stream. Like one that like rotates and then like one that's a steady stream.
That's cool.
Although California's water laws doesn't do it for me.
Because
I need a higher pressure.
Yeah.
Like I went to buy a shower head when I moved into one of my first apartments in LA. And I was like, why won't this ship to cut? Like, I had to put together that I was like, oh, there's a like limited water pressure in the desert. So I don't really use that method anymore.
That's but so it interesting. Was- I have a different shower head that has not done it for me. Because I really was specific. Like, the first shower head I ever had was my holy grail. I haven't found it again. It was like a massager, you know, cheap plastic one.
But it had
three, like, it was like three main streams of water. But they would like, and I was like, you know, because I have a very sensitive clitoris. So like anything direct is like too much. But then I need some pressure. So finding the around it was anyway. Okay. So that's, So you discovered your shower head.
So I discovered my shower head, but then it took several years to be able to come with someone else.
Uh-huh.
So like there was an era of the shower head and then I started using vibrators, which like originally I didn't like.
Oh,
what? But it's hard to say, but like I got one of those shitty, like Amazon purple metal, like just very cold, bony ass vibrators, right? Like not silicone. And the vibration was like pretty rigid, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
And I finally figured it out, but like I bought it and almost ignored it after like trying it the first time because it was so far from like my experience with the shower head. And then I kind of was determined and was like, oh, actually I can like figure out how to work this. But then I was like, I should know how to do this with my hands. And had to like pivot to using my hands. And originally it was like, this is crazy. How am I ever going to do this? But it was like a learned skill.
Yeah.
I have like a not sensitive clit. Like I need a lot of pressure and like a lot of, like I need an intense amount of like vigorous movement or like an intense vibe, like that kind of thing. So it was like stages of getting to know myself first. Meanwhile, I'm like having sex and faking a lot of orgasms. Mm. And then it came around to a place where I was like, I shouldn't be lying about this. Like I'm not doing anyone any favors. And I'm supposed to be this like sex positive open person. Like faking orgasms isn't helping those guys out and it isn't helping me get closer to orgasm. So that I got more and more comfortable showing people like what to do. Like it became like a thing that I did with people where I'd be like, give me your knuckle. And I would like show them how much pressure and like how to move their fingers around. Like what, like here's what could potentially work. And then would teach them to do that on my clit. And that even like takes a while because it's easy to like find and lose the spot kind of thing. But I really had to like sort of fight for my orgasm with other people. And so now I use vibes and also like gently teach partners to like get to know my clit. And like, it's kind of a combination, but
I love that.
It was kind of a like fight, you know, where I was like, I got to learn to A, be comfortable with this. Cause it felt like I had a shy bladder, right? Like it just felt like putting something on display that was incredibly vulnerable. And I sort of had to work up to that comfort as well.
Totally.
But also just being patient and like willing to say like, this is going to take a while. I want to show you how to do it, but like, don't feel bad if you can't right away. Cause I feel like I have a hard time coming and like that's, you know, and sort of protecting people's egos while navigating that too.
Dang. That is so much. It's funny. Cause I hear so much of my own story, but a little bit different. It's really only in the last like 2 years that with new partners, I'm like, okay, give me your hand. Let me show you, you know, and I just use them as my toy now. And that's been like incredibly effective, but the words, even after so many years of talking to people, have always been hard for me. You know, I still stumble over them and I still get stuck in those like words communication moments. That's why sometimes the physical, when I learned about the knuckle thing, I was like, oh, genius. Oh, I don't have to put their hands directly on my cunt right away. Oh, I could, that's another option.
You knew about the knuckle thing?
I just learned about that in the last couple years.
Oh, amazing. I thought I invented that. Like I truly I was just like, this is a way to do it.
Maybe I heard it because I learned it from, I can't remember who, but I learned it from a sex educator.
Maybe.
So maybe they heard you talk about
it. Oh, that's so funny. I mean, I hope I'm not the only person who's ever thought to do this,
but
like it did just come to me kind of that I was like, oh, this is kind of a hot way to do it. And I can like literally do it in like an Uber home. Like, you know,
an Uber coffee shop. Yeah. It's, a really hot, one of the hottest like foreplay things that I ever had was a guy where I was like, I don't know, you know, there was a whatever, a situation that made me an I don't know. And then I remember he just was like squeezing the skin on the nub of my finger, like on all my different ones. And that was the first time where I was like, what is this energy coursing through my body? And that's when I realized turn on could come in all these different ways. So you mentioned that you at some point were like faking orgasms as you were a sex positive person. When did you like start identifying? I mean, it sounds like kind of like throughout your whole life casually you were, but professionally, how did that sort of start to work within your personal life? You know, like what was the unfolding and when did girls on porn start for you? All of that.
What a funny. Yeah. So I was just kind of sex positive in a social way for years. Like I was the friend that people came to. I was the friend that was really frank about
casual
that.
Sex guru.
Yeah. Just was like, I'm around, like I'm happy to talk about this stuff. And like, that was just kind of who I was. I also was an actor at the time and I played a lot of horrors. Like I just very much like understood, like it's sort of a funny thing to say, in high school I was doing like Lanford Wilson and Jekyll and Hyde and like playing prostitutes.
Isn't that so funny?
It's really
how
funny.
Our schools are like, yeah, for art, they can do it. And then I'm like, I'd like to, you said follow my heart and my passions, right? I'd like to. And then they're like, no, not that, not that.
Well, I did go to an arts magnet school. So it was also an incredibly progressive school.
That's cool.
So like,
but there's
still
other ones that they do it too.
Like, yeah, they're doing like Rent and like pretending it's not about HIV. But like our school, we were very like open about that. You know, like we did Angels in America. We did it off campus, but like, we did Angels in America. Like we were insistently edgy and artistic. Like we would sort of make a stink with the administration if they tried to sort of censor us, you know?
Yeah.
It was a unique population or like school that way. But yeah, so I guess I was just always kind of open and sex positive. And like, it was always something I was sort of interested in. Like I was really fascinated by the way that sexuality or repression of sexuality, like works in different cultures, both like historically. I mean, like who knows about past lives, but I like probably ran a brothel in 1970. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I just felt some connection with that for like reasons I couldn't exactly explain, but just like understood the marginalization of it on like a visceral level maybe. And then it did kind of progress in my like artistic career. That was a big part of it. Like as a writer, I've written about a lot of sex positive stuff, obviously. And as an actor, I played a lot of those roles. And then also had a couple sort of formative things happen. Like I auditioned for this digital series called Unicorn Land and was cast. And I think part of what cast me in it was that I was like able to be really frank about the sex scenes and stuff. And essentially the premise of the show was that I was playing a young woman who had divorced young and was sort of going through her sexual reawakening on the other side of her divorce. And each episode is a different couple that I'm unicorning with. And this is before I'd actually unicorn. So
Really?
Yeah. It was kind of like life imitating art as opposed to the other way around.
Okay.
But what was great is like, I learned so much about the community that way. And like each episode's, it's kind of a pitfall or like a thing to avoid, or it's like a way to have a lovely experience. You know, it's like, oh, this couple did and said these things, which like weren't fun for the unicorn. Whereas like this episode, you can see like consent and caretaking and aftercare and like things like this.
Great practice.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It was wonderful. Wait,
has that helped your unicorning? Or I guess you don't have a litmus test. But
well, this sort of built the foundation. Before I was unicorning, I was like, I know what I don't want to do. Or like, I know to avoid that kind of situation. And it was also like literally crewed and cast with a lot of people who are in the community. So there's like a sex party at the end of this series. Like there's a final episode that is a sex party. And a lot of the background are actually just people that the creator knew from the scene and who were like, sure, I'll come get flogged on camera. You know, like happy to do that. So it was a great introduction and kind of like continued to sort of usher me into that world. And then Girls on Porn came around probably a couple years after that, because I had been watching porn for a while. I remember a boyfriend just saying like, oh, on RedTube, blah, blah, blah. And me being like, what is that? And like, I didn't know what like the aggregates were and then checked it out and was like, oh my God. You know, like, was just like, I can just do this for free. And like, just got like fully into porn. Like before that, like hadn't been like magazines, hadn't been like really anything except for like chat rooms, you know, like AIM chat rooms. Like that was, like, I didn't have video porn in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, wasn't really looking for imagery on the internet, but was curious early internet, like, dating myself. But basically, like, around middle school is when those AIM chat rooms were coming around.
Yeah.
So, like, you'd go in there and then you'd sext with someone and kind of learn by doing it. Like, it was sort of this risk-free way to try it. And, like, if you said something wrong or stupid, like, who cares?
Just bop out.
You know, but you'd hear people say things like, oh, I want to suck on your clit like it's a baby bottle. And you'd be like, suck on my clit, huh? You know, like you'd sort of hear these things and be like, what do you mean? You know, like you sort of get more of a picture of like what sex might look like. So that was all I had before. I mean, in terms of like consuming adult content before the free aggregates came around when I was like probably my early 20s.
Yeah.
And I just started like watching RedTube and Pornhub and like just popping onto those and finding scenes that were really hot. When I initially started, I was a little bit like afraid to get caught. Like, is someone going to judge me as like this incredibly horny creature? You know, like this is maybe too much to like let people in on, but was also, you know, like, I don't know, is that woman safe? You know, like, what am I looking at? That's basically like the YouTube of porn. And there were times when I was watching things and was like, ooh, and like really suddenly uncomfortable because I couldn't see consent and like it felt rapey and uncomfortable. And I met Rachel in an acting class years and years ago, and we were kind of friendly and just like peripherally knew each other. And then we had mutual friends that would throw parties where we'd see each other. So we kind of like got to chat more at those. And somewhere along the line, we discovered that we both watched porn and that we were basically like anomalies as women, as far as we knew, in that like we could trade with each other about like, okay, so how do you avoid this? Like, have you checked out X Confessions? Do you know about this?
Yeah.
And just started like swapping tips essentially. And also like, I tell this story a lot, but like there was a party where I showed up at like 11 at night and she like, I came in and she ran up to me and she was like, I pegged, because she had like just pegged that weekend and there was like no one else to tell.
I didn't peg, but I just used a strap on for the first time.
The first time. Mm-hmm,
wearing it as a wearer. Yeah. Thank you. Fucking phenomenal, dude. Mm. And so hot. Like, just such a hot experience. And so I'm like, so maybe next time I see you, I'll run up to you and be like, I bet. Because I feel like it's like now that I have the strap on, now that it's like, you know, so
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's harder than it looks, right?
Oh, well.
You think like it's going to be fine.
Well,
and then you're
so
like,
here's the thing though. I started working out consistently-ish, not too much.
Specifically to prepare for this?
No, but during the pandemic, I was like, oh, physical performance. And because I also listen to the Huberman Lab, the neuroscience podcast, like that's my favorite. And that really has helped me get my body and brain, like it, and it's up-leveled my sex life more than anything else. Because I'm a meditator, I exercise, you know, 30-ish minutes a day, 5-ish days a week, not perfectly, but it means my baseline of strength and stamina. Like I was like, baby, I can fuck you forever as long as you need. And I felt like I could. And wow. I was very, very sore the next day, but I was like fucking her in really slow, like squatty, kind of like on the bed. And I felt
after
so proud of myself.
You might have to like walk me through some positions because that's like my stamina. Like I literally need a pegging centric workout because I'll do it and be like, I'm doing it. And then I'll be like, I got 30 seconds of this left. Like okay, that's all I can give you.
I literally do Sean T's Focus T25 videos from like forever ago. But like that is what I, it's a 25 minute workout. It is intense.
Is it like, is it squats and that kind of thing?
It's a bunch of stuff. It's all body weight movement. So squats are part of it. I go at my own pace. They are too fast for me. I can't keep up, but I can definitely tell when my strength increases. You know, there's lunges, there's squats, there's basics. There's a lot of high knees.
Like, yeah.
You know, there's jumping. I don't do the jumping. I'll do the stepping unless I have my mat and I'm feeling really, but yeah.
Okay, amazing. I need this.
So anyway, that is to say that I connect. When I started watching porn, because my background is film school filmmaker, but not very much like mainstream TV, cinema, anything.
Yeah.
I just remember being like so taken out by a lot of the production. Like you were saying,
that's a
like,
lot of what we talk
safe
about.
And the production value, I'm like, nah. And so it was very not sexy for me to be in producer brain most of the time.
Yeah, that was part of it. Is like, I would be looking for things that were like authentic. I was watching a lot of like movie sex scenes because I was like, I don't need the meat shot. Like, I don't need to see the penetration, but I want to believe that these people want to fuck each other and that there's chemistry there. And then I want like good shots so that I can actually lose myself in the sex as opposed to be like, so we chose this background, huh? You're like, what's up with the lighting here? So those were the kinds of conversations that Rachel and I were having. And then she had a room open up in her apartment. And it just kind of popped into my head that I was like, man, we're going to talk about porn a lot. And was like, oh, that's a podcast.
Yes.
And I had no desire to create a podcast before that. I was like,
no, when they
radio
hit you,
plays,
they just come
like,
out
what
of
are
the,
we doing?
They're just like, here they are.
Yeah,
you have to do it now.
I literally like, texted her and sort of pitched her the idea before I'd even moved in. I was like, I have a crazy idea. Feel free to shoot it down. But would you want to do a podcast where we review porn?
Yes.
And she was like, oh my God, yes. And then our friend Amanda came on board. We were kind of telling her about the idea. She's a producer at Seth Meyers and was like, oh, this is incredible. Like two hot women talking about porn, like it writes itself kind of thing. And we basically like broke out segments. Like we had like little ideas for how to structure the show. I was running a theater company at the time. I was a theater producer and like was like, a podcast is easy. We just need mics and I'll figure out how to edit it and like we'll put it together. But it's not like I have to hire designers and build a set. You know, like this is incredibly accessible production. So we set out on that path. But then Amanda had a friend at Seth Meyers who's a writer and who also had a podcast and was like, you should pitch this to HeadGum because Jake loves porn and like they'll probably go for it. And it was like the very early years of this still flourishing podcast network. So we literally just got in a call with them and kind of like pitched
Fuck
it and like told a couple jokes and they were like, we're in. You know, like we also made them a demo. Like we did a sort of sample episode and sent it to them and we've been working with them ever since.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. So, okay, here's a question. For people who are like brand new to porn today, where do you recommend they start? Like, how do you recommend they navigate it?
Well, it definitely depends on the person, right? Like, I sort of ask if there's anything specific they're looking for because I don't want to like send them into the deep end.
Sure.
But like some really accessible sites that I often recommend for people first are like Pink Label. Pink Label is a vast network or like curated site, essentially. Shine Louise Houston manages it, and Shine Louise is one of the few women of color who runs a platform like that. And she did Crash Pad series years and years ago. So she's very big in the queer porn space and just curates a ton of other porn. So like, it's great. You can go there and you can kind of search anything. So if I have a queer friend who's like, wait, there's porn for me, where do I find it? Like, I don't have to go too deep being like, well, are you looking for pegging? Are you looking for lesbian strap-on stuff? Are you looking for trans stuff? Like, I don't necessarily have to interrogate what they want because I can say, like, try this larger site and then you might find creators there that you want to subscribe to separately or that you want to watch regularly, but you can, like, search by terms there. You can look at categories or you can just, like, generally browse. I also recommend Balesa to a lot of people. They have a section behind a paywall. but they have a lot of free content, and that is more where I send like women who are dipping into porn for the first time. And I would say like more mainstream women, like more like, I'm married, but I want to watch porn, and I'm like, I like to bake and I'm white. You know what I mean? Like, if it's like that kind of person, I'm like, okay, here's stuff that's like, it's going to have a little bit of story. The production value is going to be decent. All of the people are going to be conventionally attractive, but it's going to prioritize the woman's pleasure. If someone's like, I'm super fucking kinky and I don't know where to find my porn, I'm like, kink.com has it covered, you know, like, so there's kind of like different platforms for each thing. And I like, we really encourage people to pay for their porn, but
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with like going to Pornhub and just like seeing what you might be into. The only thing I warn people against is it's incredibly overstimulating. Like, if you haven't been watching porn and you go to the aggregates and like the free sites, it'll potentially ward you off porn forever because it's so intense.
It's
and there's like so much and the ads are nuts and you're like, I don't want to look at this.
That's
like,
so
I'm
true.
Just trying to, you know.
Yeah. Back to your personal story. At the point in which you were cast as a unicorn, did you already know about your bisexuality, like, and your or pansexuality? Like,
I didn't.
How did you discover
that
your
came
queerness?
Later. Okay. My bisexuality and pansexuality, I mean, same thing. I like to say bisexual only because I feel like bi didn't get its day, meaning like being bisexual when like lesbian and gay movements were coming to fruition, you like weren't gay enough. Mm-hmm. And so like bisexuals were marginalized even among the queer community. So there's a part of me that's like, I want to be a bisexual because I'm closer to that generation and sort of like feel a fondness for it. But I'm also pan. Like, it's not that I'm not pan.
I've heard it discussed in a couple different ways. Like, bisexuality is inherently inclusive, right? Because if there's gender queerness, it's like, yes, no, everyone is included in that term.
Yeah.
And I've heard some people specify that pansexuality specifically means I get attracted to that single person, so there is a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
And sometimes for some people they mean the same thing and sometimes they mean opposite things, depending on who I talk
when
to.
When people try to like draw distinctions between the terms, like you're really just talking about connotation.
Yes.
So ultimately it's like that person's choice what like resonates with them.
Yeah.
And part of my resistance to pansexuality isn't anything to do with the definition and more just the fact that like that word didn't exist when I started making out with girls.
Yeah.
So it's like,
when did you start making out with girls?
Years ago. Like that was, okay. So that was happening. And I think part of my sort of internalized bi erasure was around how I could just make out with girls.
Same. Yeah.
And I didn't have to be bi to do that.
Everyone likes women. They're so
like,
beautiful.
Don't we all think tits and ass are great on women? Like, don't we all like to make out with girls? And so I didn't feel like I needed to identify that way or like, I didn't really interrogate it. Right.
Yeah.
Like I just kind of was like, going about my sexual life. And I also like was doing a lot of that in this sort of Venn diagram way of like, I'm doing this because it's fun for me. I'm also doing this because it's performatively fun. And I'm like sexy and impressive for the people that are watching me make out with these girls because that's some of what was happening. And actually it was a guest in our podcast who goes by Gab Alexa online. And Gab had talked about like being queer enough. That was kind of something branded. And I heard that and I was like, oh, fuck, because I think what I felt like undeserving of was like, I can claim this sexuality because I've had sex with enough women to say that I qualify.
Yeah.
So like, if you've had sex with 30 men and 2 women, you're like, do I get to be queer? Like, that was kind of what I was asking myself. And then it was like so obviously pointed out to me that like sexuality is about impulse and not action that therefore like proves your sexuality. And I also was like, why am I afraid to take up space with this? And some of that was like, oh, I'm not repressed. Like, I don't need to come out because I don't need to like take up space with this, like quite literally. And then I came out and did so initially with like friends and I told my mom and like was kind of telling people and then came out to my dad and that was quite difficult. Like that's the sort of family issue that I mentioned before because he became born again in my adult life. And
Damn.
So his politics were sort of murky and then like secret, not secret, but like he was more conservative than he let on. And my mom kind of took the lead with political conversations and he just kind of followed her lead. And then they divorced. And then years later he became Christian. And when he became Christian, I was like, oh, no, like your politics are going to change because he was a Democrat, as far as I knew. And he was. But now he's anti-abortion and he's anti-gay. And like it was a thing to come out to him. So I think I realized in hindsight that that was part of why I waited. Like, I almost like didn't want to deal with that mess, even though we didn't have a great relationship. And it wasn't necessarily that I was like, I'm going to lose my dad. I just was like, ugh, like, I don't want to bother, you know?
Yeah.
But then I was like, people should know that I'm bi. I want to be dating women. Like, why would I be keeping this a secret? And then eventually told him after telling a lot of other people and then like dealt with the fallout, basically.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay. So have you dated a lot of women since then? Like,
I wouldn't say like a lot. I've fucked a lot of women.
Okay. Because I'm still like, I haven't dated a lot of people. Well, I guess it depends on your definition of date. I haven't been in committed relationships with more than a handful of people. Mm. Part of that is because I'm pretty happy as a single person. But also part of it is like, I think if I was going to settle down with someone, I could make a good case for a pussy owner.
Yeah.
But they're so much more complicated in terms of emotions, which is what I struggle with human-wise anyway.
Oh, I see.
I'm like, if I had one that just wanted to tell me what to do and we could communicate, that'd be good. But in terms of exploring that part of yourself and like hooking up with ladies and couples, like what has that been like for you?
Yeah. Well, that's part of what brought me to non-monogamy, because I was dating a guy a few years ago and things ended and I was like, kind of relieved, because I was like, I don't feel done dating women. And I had like just started, like I had just come out to my dad and I'd really only like started to date a few women here and there. And like I've never had a full relationship, like a big relationship with a woman basically. And so when that ended and I was like, oh, phew, I don't have to like take this whole thing out of my identity that I still wanted to explore. I was like, well, hold on, you know, like, why would I ever have to kind of thing, and started becoming more curious about non-monogamy and like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And I wasn't necessarily thinking about it in just to like, oh, I could date a guy and like date women or have sex with women just to like satisfy that part of myself. It started to unravel all of those conventions and like relationship expectations that we take for granted.
Regular human lies.
Yes.
Or norms, at least.
Norms, like, if not lies. But like, it's like,
this is the way we should be. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because we are told like we have to be that way. And then you really interrogate it and you're like, this doesn't actually make any sense. Yeah. Like the thing that I love about non-monogamy is like thinking about it as like the same way you would friendship. Like you could have best friends, but you can have multiple best friends and you can have people that you see sometimes and you really adore. And then people that you prioritize or that are like very much entrenched in your life.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking about it like much more from a theoretical standpoint and like listening to the podcast and doing the reading and like kind of just getting more interested in that. And that was also around the time that I was unicorning. So I was also like just becoming more aware of how I was engaging with couples and what their non-monogamy looked like and how do I fit into that. And this is even before I knew about like couples privilege and like my autonomy as a unicorn. Like I was kind of happy to just be like, I'm just going to pop in and pop out. And never even thought about like, oh, what if I want to date this person in the couple and not this other one in the couple? And like, how does that work out? And then it was also around that time that I met my current partner. And so that's partially why, like, I don't want to say that like he's been prohibitive of me having more relationships with women, because he's very much like encouraging of that. But when you're in relationship, I'm like less eager on the app. So you're like,
sometimes
I have less
my
bandwidth.
Needs are just met. And
you
then
know,
it's like,
exactly.
I get like, functionally monogamous if I feel really satisfied. You
yeah.
Know?
So and like, we definitely like have other people and date around. I find it definitely harder to meet queer women on the apps. And also, I do think that a lot of queer women are deterred by the fact that I have a partner. And like a lot of them want either monogamy or a more intense kind of relationship as opposed to just dating, you know? And like, you know, so there's all those factors. But
they're like, I can't bring my U-Haul.
I mean, I don't want to stereotype entirely, but like,
I learned this stereotype.
Some element of
and
that,
it was some of my queerest friends that were like, no, Wyo, like it can be true. You have to understand it's not always true, but like stereotypes exist for you.
Yes.
Know? Cause I'm always trying, cause I'll get too specific about like, but in this exact moment, you know, and then I can't make any assumptions.
Yeah.
Heuristics can help us.
Yeah. And it is my gayest gal friends who are like, no, it's absolutely true. Like
gayest gal friends is a great title. Yeah, that needs to be a something.
Yeah. But like, it was like a married lesbian couple that I'm friends with, who called out like another lesbian couple I'm friends with who were like, you literally moved in after a month. Like, what are you talking about? Like you see those stereotypes like played out for sure.
And
like, it's not a bad thing. It's just like relationship preferences and ways that we're socialized and the things that we want. And it totally makes sense. And I could understand genuinely a woman being like wary of like, I don't want to share this woman with a man. You know, I get that that's like not necessarily what someone wants.
Totally.
Like a lot of people want just like pure monogamous companionship and that's all power to them, you know?
Yeah, whatever works.
Yeah.
I would love to hear some of the specifics of your experiences unicorning, whatever feels like, you know, the bests and worst, the turn-ons and turn-offs, like what
Yeah.
Give us the highlights.
I mean, well, luckily, like, I think because I sort of got that sort of crash course through shooting Unicorn Land, I haven't had a lot of terrible experiences.
Nice.
I think the worst that can happen is, like, if you're kind of dating a couple and there's, like, a long runway. Like, I've had a couple situations where I've gone on a couple dates or, like, hung out with people a few times, and I haven't been sure I was, like, feeling it. Like, I wasn't sure if I, like, wanted to put all the energy into dating them or ultimately, like, decide to fuck them. Like,
okay.
I'll kind of do stages of dates, right? Like, I'll start with, like, a video to be like, let's just screen and make sure that, like, the vibe is right. Like, literally half an hour. And I kind of now do that with anyone I meet on an app.
Smart.
Because I, in the pandemic and, like, yeah. You know, like, the pandemic kind of made that a norm, but I also was like, oh, this is great, because how many times have you been on a date in the first 5 minutes you're like, oh no, you're just not the person I had in my brain, and you're so far from it, and, like, I could have left, but, like, now I feel like I have to give you two drinks, and, like, I don't even think there's a friendship here, you know, like.
I really would push for the normalization of being like, lemon law, and then just running away. You know, 5 minutes, be like, thank you so much, this is a lemon law for me, I'm gonna go, you know.
Oh, that's fun, yeah. Like,
but then you still waste your time getting out, you know,
you're still, like, putting the face on, like, was like, it's so great to just, like, hop on Zoom and be like, hi, I'm who I say I am, I'm so, like, let's do it. And, like, just making sure that they kind of, they match up to the profile, essentially, and that they, there's some element of vibe.
Yeah.
And then I'll kind of follow the couple's lead on, like, do you want to get a drink? Do we feel like we could maybe, you know, like, it almost is like, how strong does the chemistry feel? But sometimes it'll be like, let's grab coffee. And, like, I think I'm getting better at knowing sooner whether I want to jump into something. But there were definitely a couple times where I was, like, kind of trying to give people a chance.
Okay. And would, wait, like, jump in, like, sex-wise, or what do you mean?
Yeah, okay, jump in sex-wise. Because with couples, I'm usually, like, that's usually the basic idea. Like, I don't really want a third in another relationship, and don't really want more than, like, we're going to hang and be friendly and fuck, but, like, I don't need to feel intimately entrenched in this, and I also don't need a certain kind of, like, emotional gratification from this. Like, I almost think that's what I like about it, is it feels like a job without homework, or it feels like something I can just go play, and then I can be like, good night, and leave you, and, like, there's no
Google
emotional baggage. Like,
there's
not a lot of, like, maintenance, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, I can kind of dip in and out and, like, be this really exciting guest star and then go home, you know? So a couple times there, it's been like, okay, we had the video date, we had an initial date, and then we had another date. And then I was like, I don't think I need to fuck you guys, you know? Or, like, we had a great dinner. I knew in that dinner that I didn't want to fuck them, but, like, or maybe I wanted to fuck her but not him, and, like, I don't know if it's worth it to say that much to them, or, like, you know, like, or if I need to fuck her that badly to, like, hurt his feelings, like, let's just not bother.
Yeah.
And occasionally people will be, like, hurt or, like, disappointed by that, and sometimes it's like, you've got to get, like, messages and, like, voicemails from, like, everybody being like, just, like, thank you, but, like, we, like, your choice is your choice, but you're like, okay, we're good, like, we don't need to drag this, like, just, like, I think every engagement has a certain level of emotional caretaking that's required, even if it's like, this is really about sex. So that's kind of the worst of it, but that's not bad. It's just, like, me managing my bandwidth and, like, anticipating, like, what is worth it. And I don't really need to be, like, looking for anyone right now, because I have these people that I play with, and they're great and low maintenance, and we have a great communication. So, like, do I really need to, like, go down this path with these other people? Because I'm also not someone who, like, needs to be on a date every night, or, like, needs to be, like, constantly discovering new people. It's more like this fun puzzle of, like, oh, I have this person that I love and this person that's kind of a friend with benefits, and then, like, maybe these couples I see, like, once a month or something.
Okay, so that's an important point. What are the energetic pieces, or kind of, like, titillating crumbs that get you to a an enthusiastic, that's a yes for me, whether it's a couple or singles, and also just, like, how much do you like to get fucked ish if that's an answerable question for you?
Yeah. I mean, how much I like to get fucked varies. Again, it kind of has to do with, like, my bandwidth otherwise. Like, sometimes I go through phases where I'm really happy to hunker down and not be, like, going out a lot. It's also nice to have people where you're like, I know who you are, and, like, we have fun playing together. So it's nice to see you every couple weeks and not have to do the new groundwork of, like, I got to go find somebody else, which would be like, hey, I would love to get high and fuck and, like, watch a movie, and then I got to go home, you know, like, a little bit of that gratification can be great. I also play with my partner, and it can be really wonderful to have, like, a friend that we share, and, like, we'll have, like, a special night, like, come on over, and we're gonna, like, make it really nice for you and spoil you with like treats and drinks and like a fun high hang and then fuck. And then there's like emotional connections, which can be more like, I essentially have like an anchor partner who I'm very much in love with. And that provides like a lot of satisfaction on the emotional front.
Yes.
So like for me to add more of that to my life would be dependent on the person and would be really like, okay, this is a really strong connection, as opposed to just like, this is a friend who I like to fuck.
Right, right, right.
You know? And it's interesting. Like, I think I do saturate, like, at around, like, two partners and, like, different sort of investments in each of them, plus a couple couples here and there. Nice. But I'm definitely not going on, like, dates every night. Like, even when, like, my partner leaves town for big stretches of time. So, like, that also works out well that I can be like, okay, you're gone. I'm going to focus on work, but I'm going to see this couple.
That's nice.
Once this week. And then I'm going to see my friend with benefits this week. And like, it can literally be like once or twice a week.
Oh, you just helped me realize. I think I do want a partner who travels for blocks of time. Cause I'm so autonomous, but I love close connection, but I need some fucking breaks.
I'm very much the same way. Like I like a certain amount of independence, but I also have this desire to be like very close and like, to spend a lot of time with this person because I love them and I like really enjoy their company. But I'm also like, no, it's good for both of us to like get this time separate. And we're so conditioned not to think that that's normal or good, but it's like kind of delightful.
Another
to,
regular
like,
human lie.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. To be like, we can craft this however we want. And I can like work flexibly over here. I can come visit you. I can stay here. And like, you can see your people over there and I can see my people over here. And it's like all great because it has this like diversity built into it. It keeps things novel and exciting. And we have people that we can share, but we, and like parties that we go to and like fun adventures that we can have, but also like this wonderful way that we can be generous and like invite each other to do other things and like root for each other, but also like feel this grounded thing at home. Like feel this, like I have this person who is making sure I got home safe and like this person who's cares about me and my like work and the thing, like the larger things that I want to make happen in my life. And there's this person that just like intimately sees me and loves me. And like, that's wonderful to have while also being like, I'm going to go be a slut. High five. Like, see you later, you know?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk to you about like dirty talk sexting and like sex literotica. Like, does it, you know, and you're a writer too. So words are important and powerful. What are your, like, I don't know, favorite ways to use them? Like, how do you think about it? And or does it factor into, like, your kinky parts, too? I want to talk about your switchy bits. Like, how, like, maybe start with words and then we'll get into switchy things. But sometimes, like, words are the heart of a BDSM relationship, too, right? Like, it's a part of the dynamic or whatever. So tell me about your relationship to sexy words, I guess,
sexy
is the
words,
broad umbrella here.
Yeah, I love, I definitely had, like, a little bit of anxiety about dirty talk when I was younger. Because it was like, what if I say something stupid? And, like, I think all of ours, like, our imagination of what dirty talk is supposed to be was kind of at this height of, like, and then I'll caress you. Like, big words and throbbing members and, like, words we don't use in real life.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a big aha moment to discover that, like, for dirty talk purposes, whether we're talking about, like, vocally or in a written capacity, you're literally just talking about what you want to have happen. And, like, that is so hot. And I, like, love it in person because you can talk about like things that just happened, things that you want to have happen, like memories of sex together, or literally just like describe what's happening. And if you take the burden off of, oh, I have to use big words or be incredibly eloquent, it's really fun because you can just like add to the heat of like what you're doing. I also really love sexting and I think I fancy that I'm good at it because yeah, I'm a writer, so I, like, feel really comfortable writing quickly and just, like, articulating things quickly. But it was a similar discovery where I was like, this is actually just an imagination playground. Like, I can literally just think about what I want to have happen and tell you that from start to finish. Like, I want you to walk in the door. I want you to bend me over the kitchen counter, take the kitchen gloves off me and throw them, and then I want you to get on your knees and, like, spread my ass open. Like, I'm just literally thinking, like, beat by beat, like, what do I want to have happen? And then just articulating it and getting as, like, detailed as I possibly can. Because that's also, like, how I used to masturbate before I discovered porn, is I would kind of just be like, what do I would fantasize very literally and very specifically about, like, what could happen with this person? And what would that look like? And where are we? And, like, do they come into the room and I'm in there and like, do they grab me and like push me against the wall? Like that really turned me on. Like I have a very active brain that way. So being able to sext with someone that way is really, really fucking hot for sure. So it's really like matter of fact. It's just about like diversifying terminology, like not just saying like cock every time, but being like, well, it's a different kind of thing this time, but being specific. And it can be really hot just to like have that kind of conversation about what you're both into. Like that can be the dirty talk on field when you're like, okay, so you're into this. Like, what if it was this? And then you kind of give some details and they're like, oh, fuck, that's hot. And then suddenly you're like sexting essentially, but you're also just like getting to know each other and like warming up the situation, but you're literally just talking, like you're having a consent conversation. That's essentially
amazing.
Yeah.
Do you find in those situations that your desire for a specific someone, like I feel like how do you know when you want to do a certain thing with a certain someone, right? Because my desires are so attached to
the person,
who they are. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's
so hyper specific.
That's true for me too, that like a lot of my impulse is about like meeting people. Yeah. Like, because I'm not turned on by the idea of like, I've come with a fantasy and you're not into it. Yeah. You know, like I'm never like, make you fit into this box. So much as it's feeling that out and seeing like, ooh, here's where something aligns.
Yeah, where's
right?
the overlap?
Like, especially for like this and you
power
like this.
Play, right? Like,
yeah.
Like the person I'm going to dominate is very different from the person I'll submit to. And I am not a person who will switch in a scene or maybe even with a partner. I haven't experienced that yet.
Yeah.
Maybe like, you know, it's just something I have not yet experienced. So I don't have a template for it. And right now I'm like, I typically feel like, sorry, no, you're never going to be able to hold space for me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but I'll be in charge of you or vice versa, right? Like, I don't
yeah.
want you.
I would say being switchy in a more fluid way is more of a recent discovery where, like,
ooh.
I've been somewhat dominant or somewhat subby, but, like, haven't played too heavily in power dynamics, like, a little bit. But, again, I sort of, like, meet people where they're at and haven't necessarily been, like, I'm so kinky that this is the way I want to fuck, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm kind of meeting people there and I've had different experiences within a sort of tighter range, but, like, in more... like the last couple of years have played around more and been dipping a little bit deeper into the community in LA and being like, well, you know what? I do want to try that. Or like, oh, well, you have this person here. Like, let's see. But also being switchier with specific partners where it's like you have an idea or like sometimes an impulse like I've had where I've been like, I just feel like I'm getting an energy from this person that they want to dominate me.
Mm.
And I have like enough trust with them. And like, even in cases where that person wasn't dominant prior and like, they were like, I think I might want, I was like, I kind of felt like you wanted to. And then it's really fun to craft the scene that's either like specific to a fantasy of theirs and they kind of share that. And then like you lean into that. But I've literally had situations where like, I've been sort of subby and then switch like in the scene. And I think in that case, it's like, it's a very well-known partner, like someone you really trust and where like you're hanging out long enough or like close to each other where you can just be like, you can kind of follow an impulse and know that they'll go with it and like that they'll trust it and that you can be like, okay, I'm in charge now. And like that can be really fun because you've already established the vocabulary and the safety and the like, I know that they're not going to like this, but they're going to like this. And like, to me, other people's pleasure is so hot. So like, my dominance comes out when I'm like, oh, you fucking want to be dominated so bad. Like, I can see that you're subbing for me. Like, you just fucking want it so bad that I'm like, I just really want to give it to you. And like, that's what lights
me up.
That's
so hot.
So like, that's where it does. I mean, going back to the writing thing, it's kind of, it's an imagination collaboration workshop, right?
Yes.
Like, I like writing in rooms. I like writing with writing partners because I like to bounce those ideas around. So it's really fun when people are like, I'm kind of into this. And you're like, ooh, what would that look like? And then you're like, here's an idea. And they're like, yes. And you're like, this? And they're like, maybe not. And you're like, ooh, what about this? And you can like build it. Like, that's actually what turns me on more than anything is like building that energy with people, essentially.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's what I love about, I just got onto Sext Panther.
Mm.
And so, you know, you can go and like sext people and text them. And I love it because more so than my experience on OnlyFans, there isn't a clearer frame, in my opinion, or like in my,
I don't know this platform.
In my experience so far. So it's, have you heard of Night Flirt? It's like Night Flirt, but newer. So Sext Panther, it's just where anyone can sext.
Just hop on and sext
performer.
Anyone.
Well,
oh, performer.
No, no.
Okay,
so you have to apply to be like one of the people on it.
Okay.
And then anyone else can go be on it, right? So Wyo has enough Sex Stories listeners that they're like, yeah, you can be on our platform.
Yeah.
And so I've only done like a handful of them, but I love that, you know, like the person who is like, do you enjoy trampling weak men? And I was like, oh, yes. You know, like there's an invitation I can respond to, or the one where we were like, you know, going through the role play of like, getting ready to go to a date at a bar because my cuck husband, his family could never know that we were going to go out and, like, find someone to fuck me. His conservative family could never know how slutty I am. You know, so yeah. It's like, that's
so
the
you're
type of stuff I think
this
about.
As yourself, essentially, as opposed to, like, using a name.
Oh, isn't that
like
a great
that
question?
Yeah.
Wyo stumbled into everything. Wyo is a made-up name, but it is my regular artist name,
yeah,
insofar as whatever that means. But
yeah.
I started using it for all of the online sex work that
I
do. But it's like, it just didn't really occur to me. So this is where, in the past 2 years, I'm like a little bit dumb feeling because I'm like, oh, there's persona performance available here. Like, and I do performance art. Like, I have 25... clone characters who, if we get into the backstory, like, are on a mission to make the world a sexier, more loving place. There's a captain, there's hierarchy, they all have their specific sex works. Yeah, but in terms of, like, actually doing all this stuff, I'm just doing it as me, because I'm like, well, I'm not going to start 25 unique brands online that are wearing wigs, that are making wigs like that. You know, so yes, it's me as Wyo, and that has been interesting, because again, a lot of the people I'm talking to, if they want to play the actual fantasy game, it's really good and I have the invitation.
Yeah.
If it's complete strangers who, like, maybe don't know me from the podcast at all or who are just sort of, like, coming out of nowhere, I do get confused. And that's when I started to realize that I don't understand sex and commerce the last 2 years. You know, so I went down the rabbit hole of, like, understanding sex work. But yes, to answer that part of your question, yeah, I'm just doing it as Wyo. But I love Sexed Panther because I feel like people are coming very clearly with their, like, what they want to fantasize about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, let's normalize that. I love that.
Yeah.
Are you more of, like, the initiator with ideas, or do you just, like, bounce energy back and forth? I guess if you have experience writing in
rooms. I'm a big initiator, for sure. Like, I think people, or at least the feedback I've gotten, is that I'm often, like, it's like, oh, wow, like, you know, it's a lot about, like, reading someone's, like, energy or impulse and being like, what about that? And, like, I kind of can't help but, you know, like, feed ideas if I'm, like, into something. A lot of times it's shared, you know, it's like, I have an idea, you have an idea kind of thing, but I am kind of an idea man.
I get that. No, especially because I feel like, especially if it's a lover, I'm like, oh, my muse, and this is what the hot things that
a
you inspire
bit.
In
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to hear, well, I want to hear about Hitachi sharing.
That was just something I discovered at a party recently, where, like, a girl was going around with a vibe, and it was, like, six of us on a bed, and, like, she and I kind of started to play. And it was actually her idea to be like, why don't we just put this here? And I was like, oh my God, like, why don't we just do this all the time? Because, like, scissoring is that legendary thing that, like, a lot of people do, but is, like, overhyped and overdepicted, especially in porn, of, like, this is what, like, lesbian sex looks like. But I was like, how come every porn doesn't just have a Hitachi between the performers? Like, why are we spending 5 minutes, like, jamming into each other? Like, I know that, like, tribbing is a turn on, but, like, very hard for me to, like, get off on exclusively.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we turn, like, lesbian sex into, like, let's make it look as much like heterosex as possible, it's, like, a bummer.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, there's such an obvious thing here. And, like, because, and I think it's partially that, like, I consume a lot of porn, and in porn you want, like, the shot of the pleasure. So, like, putting a Hitachi between two women doesn't necessarily appeal because they want to see the pussy as much as they can when they're not eating it. You're like, can you angle here?
Yes.
And can you put your mouth here so we can still see the pussy while you're eating it?
Yep, yep.
Whereas I'm like, okay, so that essentially hides everything that's happening, but, like, both people get off and it's incredibly hot.
Yeah.
So it was this, like, great, hot, formative moment just at a party with, like, six people and, like, kind of becoming the centers of attention because we were doing that, and people were like, oh, fuck, you know? So that it's now I'm like, hey, should we do, like, it's now like a party trick almost, or like just something I'll whip out. But, like, it's always fun to, like, add something to your vocabulary.
That sounds super fun, and now I have to put it on my ever increasing bucket list. What about navigating girl stuff? Like, tell me about that. You wrote me a little bit about that.
What did I say?
You wrote navigating being GGG versus being protective of your own interests.
Oh, GGG
better,
is in good giving and game. Good giving and game.
I thought it meant girl, like a face.
No, totally understandable. Totally understandable. No, in the Dan Savage definition of GGG, it's like in sex, you want to be good giving and game. So I was thinking about it specifically in the context of, like, non-monogamy and, like, going to parties and wanting to indulge something that your partner wants. Sometimes that can get complicated, right? Because if your partner's impulse is different than yours, you're then navigating your consent versus wanting to be generous in honor of like what they want, right? Where like someone wants to play with your partner and maybe you're not into that person, but maybe your partner is. And so there's like this little concession that might not be like eroding your consent, but you're like, would I be fucking this person if my partner didn't want to fuck this person?
Right.
And that is like a really fascinating thing to navigate that I didn't think about before, like going to parties with a partner and being like, oh shit. Cause I was used to being a unicorn where I was like, if I don't want a situation, I'm going to just walk away from it, as opposed to being like, oh, but I want them to have fun with this person and I want to be generous and game and giving to them. But like, there's going to be situations where I'm not going to want that.
Right.
So where does that GGG line end and my consent begin? And like navigating that can be really complicated. That's been like a recent thing that I'm like, oh, I've never dealt with this before.
Do you have any suggestions for people going to sex parties with partners? Because I did once.
Yeah.
And then we broke up.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah.
It's like more complicated than you'd think. So we have a lot of like, I've learned like check-ins are really great. Like a lot of eye contact, like especially as things are happening, like things can be really fluid and you want to be like, hey, is it cool if I, can I? But like, there's only so much you can do of that before it starts to feel clunky. Or also, and this is another thing, like you can feel in the position of gatekeeping what your partner's doing. Where like someone wants to play with them and they're like, is that okay?
Yeah.
Also, you don't want to in front of that person be like,
yeah, they're right
no,
there.
Not her. She's okay. Like you don't want to feel like you're creating a barrier around someone who has their own autonomy. So things that have been helpful is like, definitely talking through expectations beforehand, you know, like as specific as you can get, knowing that you're not going to make promises to each other necessarily about exactly how it's going to go. But like, I'd like to go a few rounds. It's great to like have plans of like, these are people we want to play with because we have some trust established with them. But then you get to the party and it's a lot of like, who are you seeing? Like, who might you be into? And then sometimes it's like finding someone going and playing and then things just unfold and someone's maybe like coming in on a situation, but it's then just like making eye contact with your partner and being like, are you okay? Are you okay? Yeah. I think it's really wise to build in also just like aftercare with your partner you went with between events. Like I learned that from going to a first party with a partner where like we had a great time, but then it felt like the person we were playing with kind of attached to me. And then he was off with like other people and I was like, oh, I'm realizing that like I really crave a moment of finding you and saying, how was everything? Are you okay? Am I okay? And going through things, because even in the moment you can say, oh, it was kind of uncomfortable in this half. Like you can kind of briefly, and like I think you want to save a lot of that for after the party.
Yeah, yeah.
But if something shitty happened, you want the opportunity to say like, I need to take a break because I got overwhelmed there, or like I wasn't comfortable with that thing that happened.
Mm.
And then that person can kind of care for that event and just be like, oh, that sucks. Like, let's just take a breather on the couch and like sit and like reconnect with each other kind of thing. I also think it can be helpful to almost have like a red light, green light, yellow light situation. Like this is something I recently established with a partner around other people at the party where like when you're mingling with your partner, you can say like, we kind of did a like, hey, who would you be into kind of thing? Or like who you're excited about, but we're like, oh, let's take this further and say like, I would be up for fucking that person. I definitely want to fuck that person. I have some reservations about that person because I know this about them or I'm not really vibing with them, you know, that you can kind of identify that beforehand. So that if you see those people again, when you're in the very fluid, chaotic moments of play, they know ahead of time, like, oh, Laura doesn't really want to play with that person, so I'm not going to initiate. And if that person comes towards me, I'm already equipped with a like, no, thanks, not right now.
That's smart.
As opposed to having to turn to Laura and me being like, it's a no. You know, like.
She said no.
Yeah,
I just
like,
asked.
She said no. Mom said no. So like, and you can never really do that perfectly, but that's huge. And then every time you go to a party with a partner, like thoroughly debriefing, like the communication can be pretty exhaustive, but like, going through things that came up and then articulating to someone like, this was kind of weird for me and here's why, or like, I appreciated that you did this because that like builds learning and builds understanding. We're like, okay, here's how we go to the party next time and do even better kind of thing.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been dying to know, what do you love about pegging?
What do I love about pegging? I just love the incredibly like taboo pleasure of it. Like I said, I really love providing pleasure. But it's also just this incredibly subverted dynamic where like a guy is giving me his asshole and it's really hot to be like, I get to be in this position. I get to fuck you and like make you come. And like with pegging, it can be quite intense, you know, like literally the physical act of it is like an incredibly intense sensation for that person and like very pleasurable. So it's like really great to just be like, I'm going to send you there and back, you know, like I'm just going to fucking use your asshole and you are like, your mind is going to be blown. Like that's a really incredible feeling.
I am definitely going to let you know once I've pegged someone, like, properly, you know, and again, I have this huge long bucket list where I'm like, I do want to invite people in, but I still want to have the overlap and the co-creation. And for me, it's not about like crossing stuff off now. It's about waiting for the right person and the right timing to do this thing, you know? Yeah. So it's like, that's why I haven't had my DP yet, because I'm waiting for the best circumstances.
Yeah.
What do you feel like you are? I know this is a sort of inherently bad question, but I'm just curious. What are you the best at? With air quotes, sexually. And why?
Oh, what am I the best at? I think I'm really good at head because I enjoy it. Like, I think both kinds, I'm like, I really like to just like get really into it. And I think that lets people also give into it. Like, if you're enjoying it, they're like, oh, I can relax into this, as opposed to feeling like it's a chore. I'm also great at the communication. And I think everybody feel like when everybody feels consenting and comfortable, it just like opens up so much heat because it's like, oh, I can trust the situation. I can be vulnerable. I can be weird. I can be ugly.
Safety
like,
is sexy.
All of it is like, oof, it's just freeing. And I think that's something I'm really good at. And like also reading people and like sensing, even if someone isn't articulating it, like what's hotter for someone versus what they're quietly resisting but don't necessarily want to articulate. So that like, I think is a talent that
that's
like helps just like lean into things.
Dude, I'm the person that's like, something's happening over there. What does it mean? You know, and I've spent basically my whole adult life trying to workshop my words because sometimes I will over accurately identify a situation, sometimes maybe even before the person understands
like
their
in a
own
way that's
feeling.
Like feels harsh.
Too abrasive, too clear, too direct. And so that's the skill that I am working to build. And when I bring body contact into it, I'm much better.
Yeah.
But out in the regular world, I'm like, you are uncomfortable. I seem to have accidentally triggered your shame again. Oops. You know, like, and that's always what
Whereas,
I'm trying
like,
to.
Just being like, hey, you doing okay? Like, it seemed like you
but
withdrew.
But they won't
like,
always tell you.
Yeah, they won't always.
I'm fine.
Yeah, they don't necessarily want to burden you with that.
That's a regular human lie. I'm fine.
Yes.
No, you're not. Your body's tensing up. Okay.
Yeah, I think like drawing that out and like sussing that out and like reading people is a talent I have.
That's awesome.
And then I think I'm just like good in my body. Like I don't think that you need to dance to like fuck well, but like I was sort of an athlete growing up. I'm like decent at like dancing and moving and just being in touch with and like grounded in my body. And I think that helps, you know, like helps me feel connected. Like it helps me feel confident and present. It's like I feel comfortable in my body. And I think that like contributes to good sex.
Yeah. I would also just add on that I find you very inspirational when it comes to sex. Like, I think you're good at being sexually inspirational. I know it's kind of a separate category, but yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah, no, I think it's important. Sex on psychedelics.
Sex on psychedelics. Okay, so I have had, like, a range of experiences in this world, basically, where, like, certain experiences with certain people, it's, like, the most heart-opening, sensual, like, visceral, but also, you know, somehow spiritual, transcendent, connected sensation where you're like, holy shit, I just want to like writhe my body around on your body. And then I've also had experiences where like our bodies lost all meaning. Like I said to a partner recently that I was like, I forget the shape of sex when I was tripping. Because like what I realized is like we do kind of have rote things that we do, even if we're like with new people or we're like, this is a sex position. This is sex, you know? And like my body lost so much meaning that I truly was like, I don't remember how
this goes.
Fuck, you know? Or like, I don't remember how penetration works.
I feel
works.
That way a lot. I'm like, where am I in space? Or suddenly I'll be in a position or a configuration. Whether I'm taking pictures of someone or fucking them, I'll be like, how did I get like this?
Yes. Yeah. And like, I felt like that to an extreme on K specifically, which I hadn't done like more intensely and like wasn't sure if it was going to be a sex friendly drug because it can be very out of body. Yeah, exactly. And there were elements of that where I was like, I was less high than the partner I was doing it with and had to be like, you're on earth and like, you're okay. And like, we're grounded and we're all right. You know, like where we were like kind of flying at one point, but then that like turned into sex, but it was like a very like out of body kind of sex initially. And then it was like, very intense, but it was like having sex with my body when it was a lump of clay. Like, literally, I was like, we're all made of clay. Like, we just felt so like heavy and like weird. Like, just like there are ways that it can be like really fun. And I know people have different experiences where like cake can be really sexy, but I think you get high enough and you're like, I'm on the edge of a cliff and I'm made of dust. And yeah. You're like, I don't remember what sex is in that space, you know?
Yeah.
But I do love it. And I think it can be really transcendent, like connective thing. It's not something that I do with just anybody. Like, yeah. I treat that as more sacred and want to have an incredible amount of emotional intimacy and like vulnerable trust so that I can go off a cliff if I need to, if I'm tripping, but it can also be like at times even grounding and connective and like magical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
What else is on your sexual bucket list or creative bucket list of any kind, or just hopes for your intimate future?
I am looking forward to probably sooner than later a like full-blown night of MFM, meaning I want two men to use and worship me.
Ooh.
And just like, I'm the center of attention. It's me all night. Like, yeah. it's my show, you know?
Oh, what kinds of configurations would you want? Like, are you into receiving anal? Are you a butt person?
Yeah, but like also just like sucking dick while like being fucked,
yeah,
like
yeah.
being held down by like one guy while another one plays with me, like having both of them on top of me, being like restrained, being like tossed around, like feeling the sort of like undeniable desire of like two guys kind of ganging up on me, but like feeling a lot of trust with them.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, I don't necessarily have this like orchestrated yet, but
no, it's just noodling, brainstorming.
It's fresh in the manifestation, you know, fuck like yeah. on the hunt for the right partners. So,
oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think we need collectively to make the world a sexier, more loving place? What's the answer?
Sex education.
Yeah.
Yeah. Education and just like, like letting go of the fear around sex. Like there's so much sexual fear and like it's killing us. It's literally killing us. Gender and sexuality fear. But like we just need open minds and conversations and education.
It's so interesting. Whenever I talk to people one-on-one, it's so much openness. I have yet to have a single conversation of like rudeness that's one-on-one. You know, like I'll get some random YouTube trolls or whatever. But I'm like, people want to talk about this. They're curious. They're
open. People won't be aggressive in person. Yeah. And like, that's part of what the internet has done is like taken the humanity out of the conversations and put us in echo chambers where like the fear builds and the misinformation builds as well. But yeah, hopefully just like more conversations.
Okay. So fantasy question.
Mm-hmm.
We suddenly live in a brand new world where for at least 2 years, every adult human must serve as a sex worker. What kind of sex worker would you be?
What kind of sex worker would... Well, okay.
You can't be a sex podcaster because you're already that, if that counts.
I'd probably be like a phone sex operator.
That was my thought for you. And I, yeah.
Like, because a lot of that is like psychology and sort of girlfriending and just like being comforting to someone.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I was like, maybe I should do Sex Panther.
You should. Dude, if you did it, you could come over and we could both be doing it in parallel. And that would be really fun. That's like one of my,
I'll take a look at the app. I'll acquaint myself.
Fantasies. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really fun. Yeah, I think it would be something like that, or it would be like conversations, like something close to talk therapy, because I think I couldn't help but be a sex worker and essentially turn it into therapy, because that is a lot of what sex work is.
It's a lot of what they do.
And like, yeah, my only resistance to full-blown sex work or just like being a worker is like not tarnishing this thing that's so pleasurable, like not turning my pleasure into work,
Although I will point out there are some people who just really, really love that.
Oh, you know, absolutely. If they're the right fit. Absolutely. I just know myself and I know that like I became resentful of the public that I served when I was a bartender and I got really tired of that. And I think that like you see enough cocktails and you don't want to fucking make anymore. You know, like I'm like, I don't want to bartend anymore so I can enjoy making drinks for my friends. I'm like, I don't think I want to fuck for money because I don't want it to detract from how much I love fucking.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm already like contending with that, like watching porn all the time and being like, I don't watch porn recreationally as much as I used to.
That makes
sense.
That makes sense.
I guess that's like, that's my logic. But
yeah. Yeah. Lastly.
Mm-hmm.
You now have an unlimited budget to build your perfect playroom, castle, mansion, whatever structure you want. It's your very own sexy space.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a space to host sex parties. Maybe it's just for you and your booze.
Yeah.
What is it like? What elements does it include? Unlimited budget.
Okay. I think about this a lot because I think I actually like want this.
Yes.
But like, okay. So first, I'm obsessed with converting old structures, like restoring, but converting, but like sort of adapting old buildings. So like I want an old church.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say that.
But like turning it into like
what kind of church though? Like stone, like brick, like what are you thinking?
I've pictured like
cathedral.
Not a whole cathedral. Okay. So not a ton of stone. This is a great question. More like wood A-frame, like American, maybe 19th century church, maybe slightly more modern than that. But I love the like sacrilegious element of like converting a church into like a living sex space and then having like a like play living room or like an altar where there's a bed where like fucking happens, but like modernizing and like converting an old building into like a sexy modern play space. It's funny you asked this because I just saw online today. John Cameron Mitchell has a new space in New Orleans, not new, but like a 180-year-old house in New Orleans that he has converted into a like queer art space. And he's going to host like residencies. Like, if you want to have your alt wedding here, and it's like perfectly curated. It's like so tasteful, but like kinky and queer and like colorful, and like every detail has clearly been given like care. And I would love that so much.
So cool.
Yeah.
Oh, may it be so. I'm having lots of visions of people like kneeling on benches and who knows what's happening behind
them. Yeah. I mean, we might like have to take out the pews, but like having a couple there for those purposes.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
You know, we got to put a kitchen somewhere, but like, is it a big church? Like, is the rectory one thing? And then we have the church over here. Who knows?
And what happens in the rectory?
Maybe the rectory is like the dungeon. Like that's the especially kinky space. Who knows? But yeah, that's the dream.
Amazing. Lovers, you can find Laura on Instagram at Ramadei. It's just her last name.
Yes.
So I'll spell it for you guys. It's R-A-M-A-D-E-I. You can also see the link below. And go listen to Girls on Porn, wherever you get your podcasts. Laura, thank you so much for being a guest on Sex Stories. Thank you so much for being a guest on X Stories.
Oh, making the branding conversion.
We'll see what happens.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Lovers, that is our show. If you know a friend who would like this episode, please take a second to share it with them now. 52 Days of Play is underway, and there are so many fun ways to support and shape this next year of content. For example, if you would like private, behind-the-scenes audio updates that include my sex stories, fantasies, work noodles, plus virtual co-working sessions, and a place to share your wins and wishes out loud Monday through Friday during the 52 Days of Play, join me on Patreon at patreon.com/yolee. For the video versions of these private shares, along with exclusive daily live voyeur cam access where you can spy on me while I create, as well as interactive lives Monday through Friday, plus a mix of exclusive early access and behind-the-scenes photo and video shares during my 52 days of slutty creations, join me on OnlyFans at onlyfans.com/yolee. Or, to just see teases and unlock one by one, join me on my free OnlyFans page, onlyfans.com/yofree. For private messages, calls, or video, you can also find me on sexpanther.com/yo. If you're not into the sexy stuff, you might want to sponsor a segment. Let me dedicate a daily wiggle, masturbation meditation, or a solo research episode to you, your boo, or your brand. You pick the topic or noodle and co-create with me. Details are on my website, yolee.com/52. I am also super into parallel play. Tell me, what does your hot person spring into summer look like right now? I'd love to hear what play or pleasure you are noticing, practicing, or growing, or you can always answer one of my questions, ask me one of your own, or share a story via yolee.com/share. I especially love voice memos, but emails I can read on update episodes are also great. I would also love to know, what adult creator would you like to see me play with during my 52 days of play? Tell me so that I can send them an invitation by emailing xstoriespodcast@gmail.com. And I am accepting new photography clients now until the end of June. Details about how you can work with me are all on my website, yolee.com, and the link is in the description below. And sexstoriespodcast.com will always take you straight to the podcast landing page, or I guess I should say directly, because nothing I do is really straight. For those of you who don't know, X Stories is a completely independent creation. I fund the production of this podcast through my work as a content creator, photographer, and sex worker, and I appreciate each and every one of you that understands that your contribution to my work, whether it's Patreon, OnlyFans, or a creative session, photo shoot, voice memo, or written story for me to share, it is incredibly meaningful to me. My work is what lights me up in life, And my goal is to continue to create things that are also meaningful to you. So hearing from you helps me shape what I do. And when I don't hear from you, I feel like I'm just speaking into the void. So if you love this podcast and want it to continue, please let me know by leaving us up to 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. And for my birthday, I would love a thoughtful review on Apple Podcasts that lets others know why you love listening to Sex Stories. I'm looking forward to getting to know more of you and going deeper during those 52 days of play. Remember, if you want to work or play with me, my website, wiley.com, is where you can find details of all that I do. Thank you for listening. Thank you for spreading ripples of love. Please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Remember to hydrate, wiggle, and breathe. And may you be brave enough to share yourselves and your stories in the name of lovely human connection.